Chapter 60. Mr. Augustus Minns was a bachelor, of about 40 as he said, of about 48 as his friend said. He was always exceedingly clean, precise, and tidy, perhaps somewhat priggish, and the most retiring man in the world. He usually wore a brown frock coat without a wrinkle, light inexplicables without a spot, a neat neckerchief with a remarkably neat tie, and boots without a fault. Moreover, he always carried a brown silk umbrella with an ivory handle. He was a clerk in Somerset House, or, as he said himself, he held a responsible situation under government. Apostrophe he had a good and increasing salary, in addition to some 10,000 L of his own invested in the funds, and he occupied a first floor in Tavistock Street, Covent Garden, where he had resided for 20 years, having been in the habit of quarreling with his landlord the whole time, regularly giving notice of his intention to quit on the first day of every quarter, and as regularly countermanding it on the second. There were two classes of created objects which he held in the deepest and most unmingled horror. These were dogs and children. He was not unamiable, but he could, at any time, have viewed the execution of a dog, or the assassination of an infant, with the liveliest satisfaction. Their habits were at variance with his love of order, and his love of order was as powerful as his love of life. Mr. Augustus Minns had no relations, in or near London, with the exception of his cousin, Mr. Octavius Button, to whose son, whom he had never seen, for he disliked the father, he had consented to become godfather by proxy. Mr. Button, having realized a moderate fortune, by exercising the trader calling of a corn chandler, and having a great predilection for the country, had purchased a cottage in the vicinity of Stamford Hill, whither he retired with the wife of his bosom, and his only son, Master Alexander Augustus Button. One evening, as Mr. and Mrs. B. were admiring their son, discussing his various merits, talking over his education, and disputing whether the classics should be made an essential part thereof, the lady pressed so strongly upon her husband the propriety of cultivating the friendship of Mr. Minns in behalf of their son, that Mr. Button at last made up his mind that it should not be his fault if he and his cousin were not in future more intimate. "I'll break the ice, my love," apostrophe said Mr. Button, stirring up the sugar at the bottom of his glass of brandy and water, and casting a sidelong look at his spouse, to see the effect of the announcement of his determination, by asking Minns down to dine with us, on Sunday. Apostrophe, then pray, Button, write to your cousin at once, apostrophe replied Mrs. Button. Who knows, if we could only get him down here, but he might take a fancy to our Alexander, and leave him his property. Alick, my dear, take your legs off the rail of the chair. Apostrophe, apostrophe, very true, apostrophe said Mr. Button, musing, very true indeed, my love. Apostrophe on the following morning, as Mr. Minns was sitting at his breakfast table, alternately biting his dry toast and casting a look upon the columns of his morning paper, which he always read from the title to the printer's name, he heard a loud knock at the street door, which was shortly afterwards followed by the entrance of his servant, who put into his hands a particularly small card, on which was engraven in immense letters, apostrophe Mr. Octavius Button, Amelia Cottage, Mrs. B.'s name was Amelia, Poplar Walk, Stamford Hill, apostrophe Button, apostrophe apostrophe ejaculated Minns, what can bring that vulgar man here, say I'm asleep, say I'm out, and shall never be home again, anything to keep him downstairs, apostrophe, but please, sir, the gentleman's coming up, apostrophe replied the servant, and the fact was made evident, by an appalling creaking of boots on the staircase accompanied by a pattering noise, the cause of which, Minns could not, for the life of him, divine. "Hem, show the gentleman in," apostrophe said the unfortunate bachelor. Exit servant, and enter Octavius preceded by a large white dog, dressed in a suit of fleecy hosiery, with pink eyes, large ears, and no perceptible tail. The cause of the pattering on the stairs was but too plain. Mr. Augustus Min staggered beneath the shock of the dog's appearance. My dear fellow, how are you? Said Button, as he entered. He always spoke at the top of his voice, and always said the same thing half a dozen times. How are you, my hearty? How do you do, Mr. Button? Pray take a chair. Politely stammered the discomfited Minns. Thank you, well, how are you, eh? Uncommonly well, thank you, said Minns, casting a diabolical look at the dog, who, with his hind legs on the floor, and his forepaws resting on the table, was dragging a bit of bread and butter out of a plate, preparatory to devouring it, with the buttered side next the carpet. Ah, you rogue! Said Button to his dog. You see, Minns, he's like me, always at home, eh, my boy? Egad, I'm precious hot and hungry. I walked all the way from Stamford Hill this morning. Have you breakfasted? Inquired Minns. Oh, no. Came to breakfast with you. So ring the bell, my dear fellow, will you? And let's have another cup and saucer, and the cold ham. Make myself at home, you see. Continued Button, dusting his boots with a table napkin. Ha! 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 Pon my life, I'm hungry. Minns rang the bell, and tried to smile. I decidedly never was so hot in my life, continued Octavius, wiping his forehead. Well, but how are you, Minns? Pon my soul, you wear capitally. Do you think so? Said Minns, and he tried another smile. Pon my life, I do. Mrs. B, and what's his name quite well. Alick my son, you mean, never better, never better. But at such a place as we've got at Poplar Walk, you know, he couldn't be ill if he tried. When I first saw it, by Jove! It looked so knowing, with the front garden, and the green railings and the brass knocker, and all that I really thought it was a cut above me. Don't you think you'd like the ham better, interrupted Minns, if you cut it the other way? He saw, with feelings which it is impossible to describe, that his visitor was cutting, or rather maiming the ham, in utter violation of all established rules. No, thanky, returned Button, with the most barbarous indifference to crime, I prefer it this way, it eats short. But I say, Minns, when will you come down and see us? You will be delighted with the place, I know you will. Amelia and I were talking about you the other night, and Amelia said another lump of sugar please. Thank you, she said. Don't you think you could contrive, my dear, to say to Mr. Minns, in a friendly way, come down, sir, damn the dog. He's spoiling your curtains, Minns, ha, ha, ha. Minns leaped from his seat, as though he had received the discharge from a galvanic battery. Come out, sir, go out. Who? Cried poor Augustus, keeping, nevertheless, at a very respectful distance from the dog, having read of a case of hydrophobia in the paper of that morning. By dint of great exertion, much shouting, and a marvelous deal of poking under the tables with a stick and umbrella, the dog was at last dislodged, and placed on the landing outside the door, where he immediately commenced a most appalling howling, at the same time vehemently scratching the paint off the two nicely varnished bottom panels, until they resembled the interior of a backgammon board. A good dog for the country, that. Coolly observed Button to the distracted Minns, but he's not much used to confinement. But now, Minns, when will you come down? I'll take no denial, positively. Let's see, today's Thursday. Will you come on Sunday? We dine at 5, don't say no do. apostrophe, after a great deal of pressing, Mr. Augustus Minns, driven to despair, accepted the invitation, and promised to be at Poplar Walk on the ensuing Sunday, at 5:15 to the minute. Now mind the direction, apostrophe said Button. The coach goes from the Flower Pot, in Bishopsgate Street, every half hour. When the coach stops at the Swan, you'll see, immediately opposite you, a white house. Apostrophe, which is your house I understand, apostrophe said Minns, wishing to cut short the visit, and the story, at the same time. No, no, that's not mine, that's Crocus's, the great ironmonger's. I was going to say you turn down by the side of the white house till you can't go another step further, mind that. And then you turn to your right, by some stables well, close to you, you'll see a wall with Beware of the Dog written on it in large letters. Minns shuddered. Go along by the side of that wall for about 1/4 mile, and anybody will show you which is my place. Apostrophe, very well thanky goodbye. Apostrophe, be punctual. Apostrophe, certainly. Good morning. Apostrophe, I say, Minns, you've got a card. Apostrophe, yes, I have. Thank'ee. Apostrophe and Mr. Octavius Button departed, leaving his cousin looking forward to his visit on the following Sunday, with the feelings of a penniless poet to the weekly visit of his Scotch landlady. Sunday arrived. The sky was bright and clear. Crowds of people were hurrying along the streets, intent on their different schemes of pleasure for the day. Everything and everybody looked cheerful and happy except Mr. Augustus Minns. The day was fine, but the heat was considerable. When Mr. Minns had fagged up the shady side of Fleet Street, Cheapside, and Threadneedle Street, he had become pretty warm, tolerably moldy, and it was getting late into the bargain. By the most extraordinary good fortune, however, a coach was waiting at the Flower Pot, into which Mr. Augustus Minns got, on the solemn assurance of the cad, that the vehicle would start in 3 minutes, that being the very utmost extremity of time it was allowed to wait by Act of Parliament. 1/4 hour lapsed, and there were no signs of moving. Minns looked at his watch for the 6th time. Coachman, are you going or not? Apostrophe apostrophe bawled Mr. Minns, with his head and half his body out of the coach window. Directly, sir, apostrophe said the coachman, with his hands in his pockets, looking as much unlike a man in a hurry as possible. Bill, take them cloths off. Apostrophe 5 minutes more lapsed, at the end of which time the coachman mounted the box, from whence he looked down the street, and up the street, and hailed all the pedestrians for another 5 minutes. Coachman, if you don't go this moment, I shall get out, apostrophe said Mr. Minns, rendered desperate by the lateness of the hour, and the impossibility of being in Poplar Walk at the appointed time. Going this minute, sir, apostrophe was the reply. And, accordingly, the machine trundled on for 200 yards, and then stopped again. Minns doubled himself up in a corner of the coach, and abandoned himself to his fate, as a child, a mother, a bandbox and a parasol, became his fellow passengers. The child was an affectionate and an amiable infant. The little dear mistook Minns for his other parent, and screamed to embrace him. Be quiet, dear, apostrophe said the mama, restraining the impetuosity of the darling, whose little fat legs were kicking, and stamping, and twining themselves into the most complicated forms, in an ecstasy of impatience. Be quiet, dear, that's not your papa. Apostrophe, thank heaven I am not. Apostrophe apostrophe thought Minns, as the first gleam of pleasure he had experienced that morning shone like a meteor through his wretchedness. Playfulness was agreeably mingled with affection in the disposition of the boy. When satisfied that Mr. Minns was not his parent, he endeavored to attract his notice, by scraping his drab trousers with his dirty shoes, poking his chest with his mama's parasol, and other nameless endearments peculiar to infancy, with which he beguiled the tediousness of the ride, apparently very much to his own satisfaction. When the unfortunate gentleman arrived at the Swan, he found to his great dismay that it was 5:15. The White House, the stables, the beware of the dog, every landmark was passed, with a rapidity not unusual to a gentleman of a certain age, when too late for dinner. After the lapse of a few minutes, Mr. Minns found himself opposite a yellow brick house with a green door, brass knocker, and door plate, green window frames and ditto railings, with a garden in front, that is to say, a small loose bit of gravel ground, with one round and two scalloped triangular beds, containing a fir tree, 20 or 30 bulbs, and an unlimited number of marigolds. The taste of Mr. and Mrs. Button was further displayed by the appearance of a cupid on each side of the door, perched upon a heap of large chalk flints, variegated with pink conch shells. His knock at the door was answered by a stumpy boy, in drab livery, cotton stockings and high-lows, who, after hanging his hat on one of the dozen brass pegs which ornamented the passage, denominated by courtesy the hall, ushered him into a front drawing room commanding a very extensive view of the backs of the neighboring houses. The usual ceremony of introduction, and so forth, over, Mr. Minns took his seat. Not a little agitated at finding that he was the last comer, and, somehow or other, the lion of 12 people, sitting together in a small drawing room, getting rid of that most tedious of all time, the time preceding dinner. "Well, Broxson," said Button, addressing an elderly gentleman in a black coat, drab knee breeches, and long gaiters, who, under pretense of inspecting the prints in an annual, had been engaged in satisfying himself on the subject of Mr. Minns' general appearance, by looking at him over the tops of the leaves. "Well, Broxson, what do ministers mean to do? Will they go out, or what? Really, you know, I'm the last person in the world to ask for news. Your cousin, from his situation, is the most likely person to answer the question." Mr. Minns assured the last speaker that although he was in Somerset House, he possessed no official communication relative to the projects of His Majesty's ministers. But his remark was evidently received incredulously, and no further conjectures being hazarded on the subject, a long pause ensued, during which the company occupied themselves in coughing and blowing their noses, until the entrance of Mrs. Button caused a general rise. The ceremony of introduction being over, dinner was announced, and downstairs the party proceeded accordingly, Mr. Minns escorting Mrs. Button as far as the drawing room door, but being prevented, by the narrowness of the staircase, from extending his gallantry any farther. The dinner passed off as such dinners usually do. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.